Okay, we're here with Josh. Josh is in. It's the lunchtime social debate, and we are expecting Jonathan to come in today. The message that I've just reread is that he will be with us at some point between 12 and 1. So he will be here at some point between 12 and 1. He was opening the road, the Arrowton Road, this morning. So hopefully he's on his way. He may have even been stuck in traffic, because you know what the traffic's like.
Especially this weekend.
Before this weekend, what would probably happen is, if we've got enough sense about us, what will happen is that most of the island people will do most of their shopping today and today and possibly yesterday, and maybe very early tomorrow morning. But and then basically it's a case of get out of the way, because loads of people are coming through. I'm not telling you to not go into town or anything like that, but if you don't have to and you can adjust your times or whatever to make things easier, then maybe you should.
I think it would be a wise thing to
do, because it's going to get busy tomorrow. There's no
it's
two ways about
get
it
real busy.
But the good news is that there's no bad weather on the horizon. There's no rain, there's no, so everything
should
run smoothly. And if it's not, there is a contingency plan put in place. Now, you as an islander, what's your biggest moans about the Isle of Wight? What would you like to see the council do? What don't they do enough
of? I don't know if the council has anything to do with this, but ferry prices.
Right.
Because I just think it's so expensive to get on and off the island. It's ridiculous.
How much is it?
When I was at uni, I was paying once a week £14 something for a period return for red jet.
Okay.
And that was, it lasts up to 90 days, but I was doing, that was the cheapest way that I could do it, so I could come back every week.
So £14?
£14 some.
Is that there and back?
That's there and back, yeah.
I mean, to be honest, that's not too bad, is it?
Yes and no, but they don't do, the Red Funnel, they have a child price, then they have a youth, which is like 16 to 19, which is what I can do.
Yeah.
And then they do an adult. But it would be nice to see if they did like a student price.
Okay.
So like 16 to
interesting
like
point.
21.
Yeah. No, interesting point. We went across to Southampton last week, and I think the wife said it was like a £16 return for both of us. I was quite impressed with that.
Really?
Yeah,
so maybe
I was impressed with that. I think that's
think
a reasonable price.
A little cheaper.
I'm just asking the question because we very often get our heads into that. We bury our heads in the sand. We people say, oh, Southern Vectis, blah, 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 and they're going on about us. Okay, if you take Southern Vectis out of the equation, what are you going to replace it with?
Yeah.
So it's all very well making these really ridiculous statements about saying, oh, let's get rid of so-and-so, let's get rid of so-and-so. Yeah, okay, what are you going to replace it with?
Yeah,
you know, I think what we've got, okay, people moan and groan about ferry prices, and you know, in some cases they may have a point, but the point that you just made is quite interesting, because you said £14 is too much for there and back. I think £14 there and back is fairly good.
Yeah,
that's my own personal. If you got in a taxi,
maybe not make it cheaper then, but have like a consistent student price.
Okay,
because obviously I'm a student, so
yeah,
it'd be nice to see. Because I'd have to start paying an adult price next year when I'm 20.
Yeah.
But I can't do a student, and I'm still a student.
All right. Well, it's interesting. Interesting points you've made, and I'm sure that, you know, whether that is down to the council or not, I don't think it is, but maybe they have some kind of say in it. What we're going to do is we are going to take the break early today, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to chat to Jonathan Bacon. He's here. He's managed to fight his way through the traffic, and fingers crossed, he'll be on the other end of this microphone in just two ticks.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
White Fibre, the island's fastest broadband. But don't just take our word for it. Here's James Pickett from Arrowton.
Setting up costs was reasonable. The people who came to do it came when they said they would, and did what they said they'd do. It's fast, and it's a revelation to someone who's had spent 10 years down a one megabit BT line.
Get the island's fastest broadband free for 12 months. Call 240240.
WhiteFibre.com.
24-month contract required. Fastest speeds available in all cabled areas.
If you're one of those people that has to live life on a tight budget, you might want to take advantage of the £10 meal deal at Hamilton's Fine Foods.
£10 meal deal I started probably about 2 years ago now, and we've managed to sustain the prices that you still get the full value of that, which is the chicken, the mince, the ham, the sausages, and that chicken will go for a family of four quite easily. You've still got the stock afterwards if you want to, and the bones to make a soup. Sausages obviously is a meal in itself. The ham is another evening meal.
Hamilton's Fine Foods. You'll find them on Dace Way and Pyle Street in Newport, also in Wootton and Cowes too.
Whiteside, here's how it works. You need glasses? Visit an optician, then bring your prescription along to the friendly team in Cross Street Ride. Whiteside is a boutique shop selling budget to designer frames and sunglasses, stockists of Dior, Gucci, Dolce & Gabbana, Ray-Ban and many more. They are an independent retailer, so you can shop locally for first-class service and great glasses. You'll be spoilt for choice. Either visit them in Cross Street Ride or check out www.whiteside.co.uk.
Are you wondering what to get people for a present this year? Why not have a family portrait? Ticks all the boxes and it's totally unique. You need Hollycade Photography. Hollycade Photography is not just for birthday and Christmas presents. It can be for weddings, parties and much more. Individual jobs can be tailor-made to suit your needs along with reasonable prices. For more details, contact Hollycade at hotmail.co.uk or visit hollycade.co.uk.
Hello there, I'm Andy from Hamilton's Fine Foods, and I'd like to introduce you to some of the new things that are happening in Hamilton's. Our newest venture is our new shop in Dodner Industrial Estate, where we have available hot sausage rolls, hot coffee, hot pies, and all sorts of other things for your lunch. We're open from 10 till 4 daily. If you're working in or around Dodner Industrial Estate, please call in.
Hamilton's Fine Foods. You'll find them on Dace Way and Pyle Street in Newport, also in Wootton and Cowes too.
This is Rockin'
Hi, it's the Rockmeister here. I went to see the management earlier about the BBC and ITV having iPlayers and the likes. Why can't we do the same, I asked. We do, they replied. We have the same idea with podcasts. All you have to do is go to the website at www.vectisradio.com. Click on air, then meet the presenters, then choose which presenter's show you want to hear again. Then scroll down to the bottom of their show. If the show has pods, there'll be a selection to choose from. There's even a handy button to click if you have an Apple account. Gosh, that's clever, I thought. I think we might have to call them iPodders then.
The Lunchtime Social is brought to you in association with White Fibre for the best deals in broadband, television and phone. 100% local. All employees live on the Isle of Wight. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
Okay, it's 13 minutes after 12. Josh is in, myself is in. That's me. I'm. That's me.
And I'm me.
That's yeah. And also we've got old Curly, Jonathan Bacon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
So how was the road? Because you went over there to open a road.
The bit I opened. Sorry, these headphones are
too loud.
I can't quite hear myself, but. The new bit of road is absolutely fantastic, but the traffic once you get back onto Fairlie Road is fairly appalling at the moment, hence my lateness in arriving.
Busy.
Very busy.
I would
very
imagine
busy.
Islanders are, you know, they're getting to the shop before the festival goers get there tomorrow and get some stuff. So I would
it
imagine.
Could well be. It was a lot easier at 9 o'clock this morning, but it seems to have got quite a lot worse in the last few hours.
They're all going out panic buying, Jonathan. You know what it's like. Oh, crikey, we won't be able to get to the shops for a couple of days.
Absolutely, it's lockdown until Monday morning.
Yeah, for some people, I mean, you know, some of us are actually going. But anyway, hey, look, let's talk about. We started with the road. The road looks fabulous. You just told me something that's a lovely story. There's been a lady,
lady called Jackie Gora, has been during the course of the works on the Arrowton Road making cakes for all the workmen almost every day, as far as I can gather. Which has been highly appreciated, and so as a, I suppose, a reward for that, she cut the ribbon for opening the road today.
That's a nice story.
And even baked a cake for today, which is a great, about 2 foot square of a piece of road,
yeah,
all in black icing, with the little Lego men all over it. And it's very tasted, very good as well. We all had a bit
good.
The opening ceremony. But she's obviously been... really helping the process along, because of course it's open several weeks early, and the feeling is it's down to cake.
Well, probably, yeah.
Cake is the answer.
I think that's a nice positive spin on it, you know, because at the end of it all, it's opened earlier than they first thought. Not just a couple of days, but we're talking a good couple of weeks here, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely, and I must say that the parish clerk was at the opening as well and said a few words and commented on how good the workmen have been and how well informed the residents have felt during the process, because I know there have been a lot of comments about that, but certainly the residents who were there seem to heartily agree with that. So I think it's a good example of Island Roads doing something, showing they can do something right. They get a lot of criticism, but when they do something right, they really do.
We should be, too many negative shouts, really. I mean, you know, we should be shouting about the positives, and the positives are, we shouldn't take our eye off the negatives, because, you know, we've got to work on those, but the trouble is we get bogged down with all the negative stuff and we don't realise the positives that are going on and things being finished. And, you know, we've now got a road that goes through Arrowton and it's probably the best it's ever been.
It really is good, because obviously I had to drive up to the opening point, so I was probably one of the first people to try it out. They've done an excellent job. They really have.
And I know that Paul Herbert was in a couple of weeks ago and they were talking about the roads that they are going to do in the next 18 months, and one of them is Dodner Estate, which is appalling. But they've got a plan to do it from April next year, which is great.
Well, they're due to get round to everything by 2020, I think it is. It's the initial contract period. Where they've done a major project, I mean, I've benefited from one locally, Dover Road in St Helens, the road down to the beach from the village. That also had a complete rebuild of the bridge there, which was in an absolutely appalling state. I stood on that bridge a couple of days before they did the work, and it was rocking. You could actually move it just by leaning one way and the other.
Right.
But again, they have done a really good job there, and it is much appreciated.
I'm going to ask the question, because I can hear people behind me like saying, "Oh yeah, he's the council leader, and they've done his road." I mean, does it help being the council leader?
No, it didn't make any difference whatsoever, because actually that road was originally due to be redone. I think it was 2008. And the clever people who were looking after it at that point proposed to do it in August,
right,
it being the only access to the beach, the only public access to the beach.
Yeah.
So that got put off, and then the PFI thing started rolling. So it was well overdue.
Okay.
But it was all programmed before I was anywhere near the leadership.
So you as a council, you've inherited the PFI.
Yeah.
How's it in your? I mean, obviously, there it is. You can't push it away. You can't not have it. You've got it now. Is it now working?
It's starting to work a lot better than it was, and there are still problems that need to be dealt with. It's a contract that we inherited, a contract that was drawn up, and I think we're finding that there were a lot of mistakes and things that could have been done better in the drawing up of it. And a lot of the work we're doing at the moment, particularly Councillor Phil Jordan, I think you've had on here speaking about it, is just to identify those bits of the contract where it could be better, it could be improved. There are silly things like road closures for some of the public events that have had to be sorted out, so the carnivals and so on, and just a lot of things that perhaps, because the contract was developed by a team working in almost silo conditions rather than liaising, as I think they should have done much more closely across the island and with other parts of the council, there were some things that were just missed or not thought about, is the impression I get. Whatever one thinks about the financing side of it, which, I mean, I didn't vote for the PFI when it came through originally, and I think there are always going to be questions about that. The problems are really just in the actual terms, some of the terms of the contract, and some things that I don't think we've thought through, but we're trying to address that slowly.
Okay, so it's working. We're going to get there in the end.
I hope it's getting there.
You had a putt put in your lap, but you're making it work, which is kind of good news. But then you've just mentioned something there. It's really interesting, because, you know, we were thinking about the amount of things that go on the island. I mean, you know, the amount of events that you've then got to look in the diary, or not you personally, but Paul Herbert and his team have got to look in the diary and say, right, okay, if we do that, then we're going to affect that event there, and so on and so forth. So just imagine if they said, right, hang on a minute, we're going to do Fairlie Road in June. I mean, how much of a problem? So obviously they've got to look at the diary and think, right, well, we've got to do this sensibly. But there's so many things going on.
And bear in mind as well that in the winter, some of the works they're doing, you simply can't do in cold temperatures.
Sure.
So the active window that works can be done, particularly in some of the busy areas or those that are prone to water on the road and so on, is quite limited. So there's quite a planning process there. But that doesn't mean that they're being paid a good sum of money and they have to do it and address it. Mm. But as I say, I think the contract is not has not helped getting the process underway, and there have been quite a few teething difficulties. I'm sure everyone can think of an example of that. But I think it's getting there. I do think it's getting there.
Good. I mean, for me, it's all positive. I mean, there's, you know, okay, it took a couple of years for them to get really, really started. Now we can start seeing the progress. And we've had some good comments recently on, you know, certain roads that have been done, the one in East Cowes, obviously the one in Arrowton now is lovely, and mm-hmm. there's a few others too. So we can actually see what we're getting for our money, if you like. We're seeing a little taste of it. And over the coming years, hopefully, fingers crossed, the roads will, you know, continue to progress. And, you know, hopefully, do you see it bringing more money in if we've got better roads? I'm guessing that, you know, people, holiday makers might want to think, oh, it's not quite so bad now, we can take the
I'm not sure
across.
If the roads were a particular tourist attraction previously. That certainly was something remarked on by people who visited, but it must be part of the package. I mean, to come to an island, as I think people did some years ago, and risk breaking your axle in some places, is not going to attract you back. But if people see that they can drive around and see all the sights a lot more easily than they used to be able to, it can't be a bad thing.
Yeah, okay. There's loads of things that I want to ask you. What's the biggest... What's on your plate at the moment? What's the biggest thing you've got on your plate at the moment? Can you tell us?
I suppose there are two big things going on at the moment. Obviously, the education consultation is moving towards a decision at the beginning of next month. And also, which will also be a public decision, we're looking at the new waste contract for the island, which is up for renewal this year. And basically how people's rubbish is collected and how it's dealt with.
Okay.
That's something we're dealing with at the moment.
Two major things there. Let's go back to the first one. What does that entail at the moment? What are we deciding on?
It's the consultation that was launched back in January, looking at the secondary schools and A-level provision on the island, and do we keep the current structure, do we alter the structure? So it's that debate. That was a very heated debate. It's obviously gone a bit quiet at the moment because the consultation closed and all the responses are being assessed. There's a briefing session for councillors this evening, in fact, and then we'll be really looking at where the view, how the views come out of that, and how the actual structure of secondary education should go forward for the next, really we're talking a good 10, 15, possibly even 20 years.
So what's the arguments for and against then? What?
Well, the core of the argument, I suppose there are two things that have been key to why we've had to go through the consultation process. One is we've got surplus places on the island. We have in the region of 2,000 places on the island that are not needed, and that's going to be ongoing. I know obviously population increases, but even if one does the projections as far as one can sensibly, you still see that we have got too many places for pupils in the secondary sector on the Isle of Wight. And the other thing, of course, is that we have we're just trying to secure an extremely large sum of government money for rebuilding and renovation of three of the senior schools on the island.
I've got a silly question. Obviously, you're saying there's a lack of... there's a lack of pupils then?
So I think we've got enough pupils, but we've got more spaces for the pupils.
Right, okay.
I don't think there's any question right. that there's anything suggesting that people are
not having
people
babies.
Are disappearing.
They're not having babies anymore.
There isn't someone with a flute wandering on the street and they're all disappearing into the side of a mountain or anything. No.
So is it? I mean, because you know we've had Medina was built in. We were one of the. I think we were third year in it. So built in 76, 77. Mm. I mean, is it something that we've had too many of? Then are we talking too many high schools? Over a period of time, or is it just sort of kind of happened in the last little while?
I suppose things are affected by the new free school particularly, and to a lesser extent the studio school, but they're separate to the main education system. We don't have any control over whether a free school starts up, but obviously a number of pupils, indeed the applications were very high for the free school. That affects the take-up of places at other schools. And of course, if a school has empty spaces, that affects its funding. They've still got to heat the place, they've still got to light the place and so on, but some of the schools are finding they are dealing with empty space, which isn't economic. It's a very simplistic way of putting it.
I think that's what they made when the schools, when Medina made a few announcements last year. That's basically what they said. They said they had too few people going into the school or signing up for the school, so they've got to do something about it. And that's what I think they made a few people redundant, didn't they?
Yeah, but the other thing, of course, and this is, I suppose, the real driver behind what's happening in education at the moment, is to make sure that all the schools are as good as possible. So you don't get individual schools affected by everyone saying, oh, this year that's a good school, we'll all go there, and another school struggles. Then 2 years later, the fashion changes and everyone's going the other way. What we need to achieve, and we're doing pretty well at, is getting all the schools to be of at least a good standard in Ofsted terms, so that people actually have local access to good education. We now have a situation where we have no secondary schools in an Ofsted category. That's something that we've achieved this year, essentially. That's happened this year. And hopefully that will feed through to people realising that the education is good at, well, we're not Ofsted good yet at all, but will be good, and they will get good local education. And to say locally provided good education is probably at the root of the school improvement programme.
Which is more important then? You've got the geography of where the schools are, mm-hmm. or all the outcome of when they leave school? Or do they go hand in hand? I'll just take it back a few years. I mean, I don't know
I
how long...
It must go hand in hand, really, but surely the core of it is that pupils get a good education that sets them up for what they're going to do subsequent to school.
Hmm. I mean, I go back to, as I said, we started Medina in 1978. We were the third lot in. And I found it really amazing, just going back in time, that a lot of the kids that went to our school in Newport came from outside of Newport. Mm. And had they got, whoever was in charge back in the 1970s had got it right back then, they wouldn't have the problem that they've got now. I know it's easy to say, but then if we look at what the problem is, it sometimes comes down to just basic geography. We used to have kids that came in from Ventnor, and they're on the bus for about 45 minutes coming to school, and they're on the bus going home for another 45 minutes, and you think, that's really sad, isn't it? Because we like 10 minutes up the road, walk to school, no problems whatsoever, but they've got to come all that way. And here we are, X amount of years later, we're still doing that. And if they had said, right, okay, well, why don't we have a school in Ventnor back then? You wouldn't have had to put up with the Ventnor kids. They wouldn't have had to travel all that way. There would have been no need for Medina.
What have you got against Ventnor kids?
Nothing at all. But, and the Wootton kids could have gone to Ryde if they'd have made that slightly bigger. So it's almost like when you look at it and you think, Freshwater doesn't have a high school.
Yeah, but you're always going to have some element of that travel process when you have a community where the population isn't spread evenly across the island. We know that the East Wight is heavily populated, and some parts of it particularly heavily populated. The West Wight is not very heavily populated. Yes, of course, as part of the consultation, the question came up, should we have a West Wight secondary school? But if you look at the numbers of children who are coming through in Year 7 each year, there are simply aren't enough to make a West Wight school viable. You generally need... You do this thing in terms of forms of entry. A form of entry is essentially 30 children. And the view is, certainly for funding, anything like that, that you need four forms of entry, i.e. four classes in a secondary school to make it viable, four classes in each year going through.
Sure.
In the West Wight, there aren't those numbers. And hence we are always going to have that situation unless the population distribution and concentration on the island changes radically, which is not going to happen in the next 10-15 years. In the long-term future, if that changes, then maybe a West Wight school becomes viable.
Do we ever look at it like with a blank canvas and say, right, okay, take the schools out of the situation, let's see where we can put a, if just say for instance we could now magically put a school there because there's X amount of kids in that area that need to go to school, would we do things dramatically different? You know, I know it's hypothetical, but we've,
you know, not sure we would, because Ryde has a big school because there are a lot of people there. Sure. Sandown has a big school because there are a lot of people there, and we have three schools in Newport because they're the most children feed into the Newport area. So I'm not sure the picture would look that different.
How much of a hindrance was it? Was it because we had obviously a reorganisation in the last sort of 5-6 years? And one of the things, one of the biggest bones of contention was that my son was going to go to a sixth form college at what used to be Node Hill Middle School, and he wanted to study sports, PE, and whenever he wanted to do anything, if he had lessons of PE or anything like, he had to go to Carisbrook or he had to go to Medina. So you look at it and think, right, okay, we've got this school, lovely old school, great old building, but there it is. But it can't do the things that we should be doing with it. So does it ever come into the equation that we think, right, hang on, why don't we sell this building, put another school somewhere else, or utilise something else, you know, because it doesn't do what it's supposed to do?
Well, I think that's work in progress, because, of course, the Innovation Trust, who own and run Medina and Carisbrook, they have Node Hill now, and they run that as people think it's actually a joint sixth form for the two schools. It's actually each school has its own sixth form in the same building. But now they are bringing those together so that they actually run on same timetable, etc. And that will assist the process of making sure that what people want to do or need to do in their sixth form studies as available in the same location. A problem we've got that was a part of the consultation is that we have a lot of little sixth forms around the island. An ideal, and I'm not saying this is going to happen because we simply aren't in the place to go this way on the island, but certainly if you were starting from scratch with sixth forms, is to create a large sixth form that has all the staff and can attract so many pupils that any course becomes viable. Because if you have a course that is only going to attract two or three pupils because you have a small cohort at that school, sixth form cohort, then the course simply doesn't run, and that can prejudice someone's life chances in terms of what they need to do to go to a particular university to study a particular course or move on to whatever form of apprenticeship, work experience, whatever it is. So yes, if you were looking at creating things from afresh in the sixth form, I think you'd have to say yes, you would do things differently. But that doesn't mean that we can't, working with the schools, make the existing system better, and there be more co-working between the sixth forms that will increase the availability of courses and therefore the availability of chances to the children.
I've got to put you on the spot a little bit, but feel free to duck and dive if you want. I mean, how do you see it all going? I mean, are we going to lose a high school? It's because I think this is the major argument, isn't it?
I think it would not be appropriate for me to comment, because that's going to be a decision of the executive, and that's going to be at a public meeting. That's going to be on the 8th of July, and there's still work going on, so I don't want to be drawn on that at the moment, because I don't think it would be fair to make a public comment when there's still work to be done and those public meetings and debates to be had.
Would it be fair to say that if you did come out and say something, it may sway the outcome, so you're stepping aside?
Whether it would sway the outcome or not, I don't know. I just don't think it's appropriate to possibly be perceived as prejudging the debate or imposing my view when it is a view of the executive that has to be taken.
Okay, but I'm guessing that, you know, if, just say for instance, we went down the road of, you know, they've got to close a school, lose a school, it will be the last resort?
I don't think it's anything that anyone would want to do, would readily want to do. But as I say, I think it's probably better. When we've got some more information in the public domain, which actually this is a topic that will have some public debate next Thursday at the council scrutiny meeting, where the results of the consultation will be discussed And that will then feed into the final decision-making process. So there'll be the ability to comment more on the data that's coming through at that point.
Let's be honest, that's probably the best way of doing it anyway, isn't it? You're going to wait for the information. There I am. I'm asking you the questions about, well, why haven't we got a high school here? Well, you've answered that question purely and simply. We're talking about the West White. Mm-hmm. There's not so many people out there. Do you wish that people would ask more questions rather than just make brash statements because they've made up their mind on something? Because I've asked a question, you've answered it, and I'm now thinking, right, OK, so there's less people living over there. That makes kind of perfect sense.
Well, that's something that came out in the consultation meetings. When we were trying to launch the consultation, there were quite a lot of people who said, what's the point? You've made up your mind anyway. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. That's absolutely not the case. And I was pleased to see that at the consultation meetings themselves, there was an absence of that on the whole, and people were listening to the information. There was a lot of data presented, a lot of figures and statistics to look through, but people were looking at that, asking sensible questions and taking that information away to come up with their view. There were obviously people who said, I know what I think, I don't need to listen to your data. And someone said, I know what you think as well. And I haven't made my mind up yet. So there's an element to that. But I think, on the whole, the consultation was approached properly. It's unfortunate that it wasn't engaged with by more people. That's always a situation we have on the island, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't consult. I suppose my chief concern in that regard is that more people didn't really engage with the sixth form side of the consultation, because I think that's something that rather got lost with particularly all that heat in December and January about you've made your mind up already and so on, and trying to steer the consultation in certain ways, which we avoided, and we launched and we went properly. But there's a lot of information there that's been gone through that will become public, and as I say, the decision will follow based on the consultation information.
And let's be honest, it makes more sense to gather all the information so you can make the right decision. It's not rocket science. I completely see that. And if you haven't made your decision, well, you obviously will do when you've read all the paper that you need to read. Because let's be honest, you can't. You just go back to the beginning when the independents took over. That's what was that old saying? Root and branch. That's what the terms we're using. And I must admit, I've got more confidence in that kind of philosophy rather than let's just, you know, let's hands off that because that's been there for a long time. You can't change it. Well, if it's not working, you need to change it or need to do something rather than bury your heads in the sand. So I think it's great. I welcome that.
But sometimes you need to explore things. You may think that looks as if there are problems there, perhaps we do need to change it. A deep examination actually says you don't need fundamental change, you just need a few nips and tucks, but you don't know that unless you go through the process of examining things in detail, asking the questions and getting people's views.
And too many times islanders just don't like change. Let's go back a few years. I mean, was it the red carpet? Do you remember the red carpet, the moans and groans people had about the red carpet? It was when they reversed the road and allowed buses to come out around and so on. I mean, the hassle that caused for people. They were so, you can't do that. We've been walking down that road for years and only looking left. Now we've got to look right and left. That's not on. And, you know, that went on for a good couple of years.
I'm still not sure that everyone looks right and left.
No. Kevin Wilson says, can you put your weight behind the Eco Island idea and make the island more welcoming to wind energy, perhaps encouraging the use of smaller scale domestic wind turbines, even if the big ones aren't allowed?
We've got to pursue renewable energy. Just the name gives that away. What we have to do, though, is we have to go through the planning processes and the way of doing these things. What you mustn't do is just to block off and saying, that's not going to happen, we're not going to have that. I don't think you can take that approach, and I don't think we do, but you've got to recognise that things have got to go through the right process.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more. David Nove says, in view of the cutbacks his administration is having to make, do you regret criticising the Conservatives when they were in charge?
I don't understand why the cutbacks were the fact that, but no, I don't.
Okay. I don't quite get the
premise of the question.
No, I don't really, to be honest. In view of the cutbacks his administration is having to make, does he regret criticising the Conservatives when they were in charge?
I think there's some things that I'm afraid, although I'm hoping we're moving together to working together much more closely, because I think the Conservative grouping on the council is a very different group to what it was 3 years ago. I think they would recognise that there are things that were done under the previous administration that just have not placed us in a good position. I suppose the classic one that we talk about at budget time is keeping the council tax down. The effect of the council tax freeze on this council that was occurred under the last administration probably has cost us in budgetary terms, well, it depends how you do your figures, but maybe between £5 and £9 million from our annual budget.
Okay.
Just so, in terms of the cumulative effect of it since it was imposed.
Is David meaning that, whilst they were in charge with all the cutbacks, you criticised them, and now you're in charge with all the cutbacks, do you regret maybe? I think that's maybe the point.
I think the difference is in how we're going about it.
Okay.
We're still having to do things and do some very unpleasant things that people don't like, but the approach is certainly that we will keep things back office, try and avoid things affecting public directly. You cannot achieve that throughout with just due to the depth of the cuts, but I'd hope we're taking a much more considered approach and taking account of people's sensibilities more than perhaps happened previously.
Is there more consultation, do you think, this time around? Because it just felt like the previous lot, they kind of said, we're doing it, and there's only a few things we're going to ask your opinion on. And it was done.
I think there's more meaningful consultation.
Now?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to think we listen more. We listen more. We do listen. It doesn't always mean that you can do what people say, but you can certainly take account of views much more if you listen more.
How hard are the cuts to make? Because you've obviously, we've been told by our MP that we've got to cut our cloth accordingly, and it is a simple and one of the bugbears of mine is when people just make that flippant remark, they're making cutbacks. Yeah, well, hang on a minute, it's as simple as a husband and wife and small family, if you like, husband comes home and says, hey look, my wages are being dropped down from 20,000 to 15,000, we're going to have to make do. And is that a fair way of putting it, but times by X amount?
Yeah, absolutely. That in very simple terms is what is happening. And we're going to get to the point where we have serious difficulty because well, as you have within the family, if you use your analogy, there's some things you have to pay for. There's some things you have to do. You have to feed yourself. You have to pay your rent. There are other nice things it's nice to do. Have a holiday, buy a CD, whatever. In council terms, those are the statutory services and the discretionary things. The discretionary things have to be the ones that go first, because we are actually compelled by statute to do the other things. But we are now in the stage where we have to look at how we do those statutory services. Can we do them more cheaply, more efficiently? If things carry on the graph line that they are at the moment, we will get to that point, and this is not unique to the Isle of Wight, it's being found in a number of councils around the country, where we just actually, we've lost the discretionary services and we don't have the money to do the statutory services in any meaningful way. And that can't carry on. There's got to be a change at some point, but that is the route we seem to be heading down.
So what happens if we're heading towards that way, if when do you see it? What year? I mean, are we 6 months away, a year away? Because we've heard
we're not that close, but I've talked to other council leaders, and we need to get together and approach Westminster. I suppose we're going to get to that point where we have to say, What do you want us to drop doing? We can't do everything that you tell us we must do.
Does there come a point?
You tell us. You're the ones putting this in this position. What do we do about it?
People have said in the last 12 months, I don't know how true this is, but they say that there will come a time when you know, the Isle of Wight Council can't do what it's supposed to do, and they'll just hand it over to Portsmouth. I mean, do you ever see that happening?
I would seriously hope that we don't get to that position. I hope that sense will be seen way before we get to that point. The island is very much its own entity. We have a lot of strains and pressures on us because we're an island, and they do add to our budgetary troubles. But I hope the light is going to be seen long before we get into the bed with another council, because I don't think, if one really thinks it through, that would be best for the island. We may have to radically change as a council, but I don't think that would be a positive change for the Isle of Wight.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure quite a few people would say, get rid of the Isle of Wight Council, they're rubbish.
See, I hate those flippant remarks. I mean, not that you just said, I'm not sitting here thinking, well, I hate what you just said there, but I hate hearing it from other people, because I think sometimes, I used to be that person, you know, it was easier to knock, it was easier to pour cold water. Now, looking at it from the other side, I mean, I look at, you know, this Isle of Wight, which I've lived on most of my life, you know, I want to see it flourish, I want to see it do well, I want to see people do their job, I want to see those elected people get off their backsides and actually, you know, earn their money, stop your bickering and just put the island first. That's what I want to see. And I get so frustrated when people make flippant remarks that don't have any weight at all in what they're saying. They just make that, oh, let's get rid of the council. The council's doing a blooming awful job. Well, there's a lot of people that are working very, very hard. I was going to say something else then, but, you know, and for what? To hear people say, oh, blooming council. This is like, you know, blooming island roads. It's easier to say, isn't it, rather than look at the positives, rather than do a little bit of homework, check out the roads.
You're always going to get that, and I think the way politicians are perceived is, to a certain degree, and certainly to a certain degree fairly, as a result of behaviour in the past. Hmm. And so that's you just have to bear that. But I think people are gradually realising through the cuts process that we're all in it together, as a phrase I've used a couple of times. And you look at parish and town councils, who still, there are strong elements of, that's not for us to do, that's for the Isle of Wight County Council to do, we've never had to do that, and also volunteer groups and so on. People recognising that we're in a situation where, if we want those services, if we want that, whatever it is, be it cutting verges, cleaning beaches, whatever, we're going to have to do something ourselves. And I think that is starting to come through. It's maybe it's the wrong way to put it, but it's almost that sort of blitz spirit. I don't want to over-dramatise, where, you know, if you all get in there and work together, you can actually get a lot of things done. And certainly town and parish councils, who are raising precept as necessary, dipping their hands in their pockets, taking on services, taking on parts of their local provision, that is largely being very much appreciated by their residents. And it is meaning that those important little things, but sometimes for people they are the most important things, are being maintained, and the island is a better place for it.
Yeah, I agree. It's so many, you know, I just get so cross with people because they can't see the wood for the trees. It's just too easy to say, oh, blooming council. And, you know, you guys are being trimmed. You guys are, you know, how many people are now working, you know, working at the council compared to 10 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, couldn't give you the figures, but it's a lot less.
It's a lot less. And, the you know, people are having to work a lot longer, a lot harder, for, in some cases, a lot less money than what they were earning a little while ago. So, you know, I think sometimes we've got to cut you guys some slack. But having said that, I also believe that, you know, the damage has been done in the last 10 years with people maybe being overpaid, with wages too high, and a lot of people doing nothing, because then some people will say, well, hang on a minute, in a minute we're going to trim it right back, so we've got this lean, mean fighting machine. And if we've done that and got that, it would mean that all of those people that you had before weren't doing a great deal. And there may be a threat of that. I mean, you know, one of my biggest bugbears in the past is people like Steve Bynum taking a hefty old wage, screwing things up and then disappearing to the mainland. And he wasn't the only one. There were other people that did it too. You know, there was a guy called Bernard Quarrell who cocked things up and then he disappeared and got paid for three more years because he had a five-year contract. Sat on a beach somewhere, no doubt. You know, so that all those things have been contributing factors. You know, but now,
well, that's what I was saying about things that have happened in the past. We just have to bear the brunt of that, and it does make the job harder,
sure,
in trying to get through the current situation. But someone's got to do it.
Dean says, "Do you think that your policies are going to encourage tourism?"
I certainly hope so. Tourism is such a major part of this island. We're looking at things like regeneration in Sandown. We're working with Visit Isle of Wight. We're working with them to try and develop a new funding scheme which will support them because they do such a lot of good work. And will also, if it comes through, help us make the island look better by helping out with Public Realm, which is an area that's suffering from cuts at the moment. So, yeah, it's a key part of our priorities at the moment, the economy and tourism, because tourism is key to our economy.
There's so many things to be positive about here. You know, we're going to get new roads, which is lovely. It might bring tourism across, it might not. But we've got so many other things to shout about. We're just about to have one of the biggest events in the country. You know, with the Isle of Wight Festival, that brings so much. And I know there will be people on Fairlie Road that will be moaning and groaning because they don't want it here. Equally, there'll be people there that would love it because they ain't got to walk that far. Because I'd love to live up Fairlie Road.
Everyone would.
You know, we're a nation of moaners, but the Isle of Wight, I think, lead the way sometimes because they don't like change. They don't like these. They don't like being put out. And in actual fact, half the time they're not being put out. They're just like moaning. And you know, unfortunately, that is the case. So you know, I think the tourism side of things, yes, okay, we've got to work on it, yes, but we've got so much to be grateful for.
So were you moaning there that you actually have to walk all the way to the festival rather than actually being able to look at it out of your back window?
Yeah,
he's moaning about everyone moaning.
So I'm having a go at me as well because I'm a moaner as well. Yeah. See how easy it is to do. But it's not done in a nasty way. Simon Humpty says, could you say why bus fares for 16 to 18-year-olds are going up because the council has cut the money it gives Southern Vectis whilst pensioners still travel for free?
The pensioners travelling for free is a government scheme we have to obey, and it is a serious inroad into our budget because when you get your pensioners bus pass, that entitles you to travel on buses wherever. And we obviously get a large, this is talking about attracting tourists, that's quite a large part of our tourist trade, and they can use their bus passes here, and we have to pay for that, we have to subsidise that.
Right.
So that's one of those national things, and the continual requests to central government, can we do something about this, can you do something about this? But if you think about it, which government, what government is going to cut pensioners' pre-bus passes unless they just want to say, well, those are some votes we can't do without. So we're in a bit of a cleft stick there, but part of the impact of that, one of those statutory things that we have to do, is those things that are discretionary suffer as a result.
Right, okay, so basically it's a national thing then?
That is a national thing, yeah.
So there's nothing
and
you can
again,
do about it.
I talked about some things where we suffer more being an island. That's something we suffer because we are a very nice island that people want to come and a high proportion of elderly people want to come and spend some time here and spend a holiday here.
What other, you know, situations are similar?
I'm not sure I can think of anything off the top of my head. So you mean in terms of just statutory services?
Yeah, we got one arm up behind your back, and it's like, you know.
I suppose, well, beach cleaning might be another example of that. Yes, there's a certain level of litter clearance and keeping a beach in a fit state that is statutory, but quite a large proportion of it is discretionary, and it's a discretionary service. It is at risk. But again, building on that, that is one of those areas where we are finding that parish and town councils are seeing what is happening and seeing what they can take on and what they can look at in that regard. I suppose that could be another example.
Okay. So do you now, because you've just made some slight cutbacks to, or some cutbacks to Southern Vectors, the amount of money that you give them, and they're now making a few alterations to their rides. They're having to cut their cloth accordingly.
Yeah.
I mean, was that done because it had to be done, or is it, you know, we've got to
take some money out somewhere, and we're trying to do it judiciously and fairly, but it cannot be done without pain now.
Unfortunately, that's the bottom line. Would it have made a difference if we'd have had a different government? Just say, for instance, if we'd had the Labour Party in, would it have made? Because one thing that I've heard, many people from the council say, it wouldn't have made any difference who got in. They're going to make the same cutbacks. But let's be honest, you know, Conservatives cut deeper than Labour. So would it have made a difference?
I'm not sure it would make a great difference, and certainly not immediately, because government spending is set several years in advance. They're not just sitting down now thinking, what are we going to do next year?
Right.
We've got a fairly good idea what challenges we're going to face and what cutbacks we're going to get over the next 3 or 4 years. We are awaiting, obviously, Mr. Osborne's various statements in his budget that's on the 8th of July as well. And maybe there'll be more pain there that we wouldn't have got with another government. I don't know. But it's the way government's finance works. The picture is set fairly firmly quite a long way in advance. So we wouldn't suddenly have everything changing if there had been a change of central government, I don't think.
OK. Ian Lordall says, street markets on the Isle of Wight are depleted and struggling to survive in the like of Mary Porter's proposals for regeneration of high streets. Has the council any plans to implement her ideas for regeneration of these areas? Oh, I'd like to answer this. Mary, who?
What have you got against her?
I just think, yeah, it's all very well you're coming down and saying, oh, you should do this in your high street and that in your high street. It doesn't come down to that. It comes down to how much money you've got in your blooming pocket, doesn't it? It's as simple as that. And you know, thank God for pound shops and Lidl. You know, because, let's be honest, there's a lot of people out there that are struggling. They're on the borderline. And, you know, yeah, it's all very well putting a load of new shops in. Wonderful. But can they afford them? No, probably not. That's the reason why the shops are being used. Anyway, you ought to be answering this question.
I thought I'd let you have a moan.
I was having a moan, absolutely. Mary Porter, what does she know about the Isle of Wight?
Well,
and the high street.
We should invite her down here, see if she's got some ideas that we could do with very little money.
Well, that's exactly it. Yeah, come on down and work your magic then if you can. But don't waste our blooming time. You know, it's all very well telling us, your high streets are depleted. Yeah, we know that. The reasons why is it comes down to necessity, doesn't it? It comes down to, let's be honest, there are a lot more people going in pound shops now and Lidl. I wouldn't have been seen dead in Lidl 10 years ago. But now I just think, no, it's a wonderful place, and thank God for it, because it's allowing people to eat and afford. You know, I just think that's a wonderful thing. Yes, we've got problems with our high street. Yeah, there's a lot of empty shops around. Okay, one thing you could do is probably drop the rates. Can you do that? Is that in your power?
Business rates are set by national government.
See, answered. See that. But how many people do you think are out there saying, "Blooming council, the rates are too high. It's all your fault, Jonathan."
Again, that's another thing where we suffer from our particular economy, because we have quite a low business rate base. We get 50% of the business rates back. The council gets those, the rest goes to central government.
Yeah.
For some areas, if you looked at areas in central London, they get fantastic sums of money out of their business rates. We don't, because we haven't got that many businesses. What we can certainly do is try and encourage more businesses to come here and increase our business rate base. But again, you know, we are stymied somewhat again by national government.
Okay, so they set the figures. Well, let's end on parking, because there was a couple of people that were talking about the parking charges in certain areas, and now no one's using the car parks. So was that an own goal?
What we're doing at the moment is going through a full parking strategy. We have I know people will hate it when you talk about committees, but we have a committee that is, you talked about earlier, wiping the slate clean and starting from scratch and working out what we need. That is a process that's been gone through one of our committees with parking at the moment. What car parks have we got? What do we actually need? And try and look rather than plucking the odd bit of money here, the odd money bit of money there, imposing charges there, and seeing how can we actually run car parks as a much more cohesive structure. So would we be in any different situation if we'd just created free parking all over the place? We'd have less money in the council, would have had to cut something else immediately. Would that then have generated something in terms of benefits overall after a few years? I don't know. The projections suggest not. But what we're doing now, instead of the process that we've just had, which just said we've got to do something, is, as you suggested, cut it back to square one. And how is the best way to deal with parking across the island?
Okay.
We've got some car parks we probably don't need, and that'll be why they're empty. We've got some areas where, should you actually have free parking to encourage the high street? You do that, but you have a counter-argument where free parking, people just park a car there. They're not using the shops. They're just leaving the car there, and then they're going off. And that is actually blocking high street trade. So there's some very difficult balances in this process. But so I think a good, long, hard think about it, which is what we're having now, and hopefully we'll get some results from that later in the year, is what we need.
OK, we've got to go because it's 1 o'clock. That went quick, didn't it? Thanks, John. I wouldn't want your job, I'll tell you. I wouldn't want your job at all.
Well, I've tried yours.
Yeah. A lot less stress.